Today I announce my decision to withdraw from the race for the 23rd State Senate seat. After countless hours of examining the legal details and many meetings with the experts in constitutional law throughout the state, I am convinced that challenging the legal precedents built up over the years would not be in the best interests of the voters of the 23rd District at this time. Also important is the fact that I've learned that other qualified candidates might be available as soon as I made this decision. In order to be fair to them and their possible campaigns, I have made my decision clear cut to withdraw. I have received a number of advisory opinions, and all of the opinions have agreed with me in that the current constitutional interpretation has created an unfair situation. However, based on court precedent, the opinion appears to be correct and can be changed only through a revision of the Constitution. Even if I were successful in being nominated and winning the special election, it appears the votes for me would be voided and my Democratic opponent would be awarded the seat by default. This would be a travesty on the popular election process and would take away the right of the people of the 23rd Senatorial District to elect a senator of their choosing. Therefore, I will step aside and support the Republican nominee in the February 19th special election.
Very good. Thank you.
It was an historical day in Ottawa County. The chairman of the powerful Ways and Means Committee of the Board of Supervisors stepped down to retire after 39 years of service on the county board. In addition, Henry Slaughter of Talmadge Township celebrated his 89th birthday yesterday. County employees and supervisors honored Slaughter at a surprise party. Following yesterday's board meeting in the county building at Grand Haven, they presented him with an appropriate gift, a money tree. What has Slaughter enjoyed the most over these 39 years on the County Board of Supervisors?
I enjoyed meeting with the boys here because we've had a great many different thoughts, but when we dissolved them out, it's worked out to the best of the county. And that has been my interest throughout my service here to do for the people within Ottawa County.
Regarding his accomplishments on the board, Slaughter said this.
When I first started out, Ottawa County was in the red continuously, and it didn't appeal to me as good business. So we got together, and finally, after the first few years, I was very careful because I didn't know the ways of the county, and silence was bliss. But after I got acquainted here and know the thinking of the boys here, we decided, and I used to speak up maybe a little harsh at some times, and we was going to bank and borrowing money and paying 6% in advance. And naturally, that wasn't my way of life. So after a lot of argument, they finally asked me if I could do better if I was the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, which I accepted. And we've never been in debt since.
Doug Chapkus, WGHN News.
We began our operation this morning in the new office at 4 a.m. Things are a little hectic, but we're making the best of a bad situation because some of our new equipment hasn't arrived yet. We had to move a lot more stuff than we thought we would have to move. So Saturday was a rather busy day. But in a few days, we should be pretty well shook down. And then we'll be operating much more efficiently. We have quite a bit more room in our new office. The work floor is much more efficiently arranged, and we can take advantage of all available space, which wasn't possible in the other building. Our carriers, some of them, will have to walk a little further now than they used to. One, for instance, has about 12 blocks extra walking now, just to and from his route because of the move. He comes back to the office a few times a day, and it tack on about four blocks each time. Makes about 12 extra blocks for him. But all in all, I think we're going to be very happy here. We feel that with the added space, even though it isn't much larger than what we had before, it will be much more convenient for us to be working out of this facility. We've had a tremendous increase in mail volume over the last 6 months, and this caused us quite a few problems in the old building, which we hope we won't have to cope with in this one.
He has been active in his church and was recently elected to the Board of Elders for a 3-year term. He's a member of the Grand Haven Kiwanis Club. He was moderator of the Grand Haven High School Key Club. He was instrumental in formulating the plans for Little League football, which will come into being this year. He instituted the Indian Guide Program at the YMCA, which is a program designed for boys from ages 5 to 7 to develop a relationship with their dad. He was recently elected a member of the Board of Directors of the YMCA and will serve a 3-year term, 67, 68, 69. He serves on the screening committee for the Haven Foundation, and in that capacity serves as an advisor. In conjunction with other local activities, he has given many hours to the migrant worker program regarding physical examinations for the migrant workers. He has also given freely of his time in relation to the Bloodmobile and other projects. He instituted the sex education program for boys at the junior high school, which took place in 65 and 66. And for the year 67, they have instituted the same program for girls. He has given talks to numerous groups, including the Jack and Jill School, PTAs, the various PTAs, JC Wives, other PTAs, and social organizations. He is a board member of the Ottawa County Chapter of National Foundation for the March of Dimes. He serves as medical advisor and consultant in that field. He has given the speeches for the kickoff dinners for 1966. He is a member of the Board of Directors of the Ottawa County Cancer Society. He was co-chairman of the 1966 Cancer Drive and again will serve in the 1967 Drive. He's a member of the Board of Directors of the Michigan Children's Aid Society. Again, there he serves in the capacity of medical advisor and consultant. As a professional man, he's an active member of the county and state medical societies. He's an active member of the West Michigan Pediatric Society. In 1966, he reached the culmination of every young man in that field when he was nominated and elected by his constituents as a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics. In coming to Grand Haven, he upgraded a sorrowful need at the hospital and creating an award for pediatrics. He also serves on the hospital building committee. He's receiving the award for outstanding community service through his loyal and faithful and unselfish efforts. It's with a great deal of pride that I'd like to present the 1966 award to Dr. Jack A. Henderson, M.D.
It has been both a privilege and a pleasure to have served for 12 years as a member of the Grand Haven Public School District Board of Education and its president the last several years, for which I am humbly thankful. During this period, our school system has expanded with new and remodeled buildings and facilities for the best education for our boys and girls. It was made possible by the sacrifices and efforts of the taxpayers, the parents, able administrators, and our teachers, with all of whom it was a distinct pleasure to work for and with. It is my sincere hope that this school district will continue to furnish the best education for our children, giving each an opportunity to attain his and her maximum attainment regardless of economic status, creed, or color, truly a democratic approach to education in a free country. We can be proud of our past accomplishments. Let us eagerly look forward to even greater things in education.
I personally, on behalf of the city, would like to say that we're very sorry that Mr. Ralph Carr is going to leave us. He certainly has been a very faithful and dedicated servant to the community, and I think that we're going to miss him very much. We certainly wish him well. in his new venture and his new job, but we certainly will miss him in Grand Haven. We hope he'll come back and see us real often.
Mixed emotions that we leave Grand Haven and Grand Haven Municipal Hospital, and we appreciate everything that everybody has done for us and for the many long hours that the employees have given to the hospital to help hold us all together. We will always think of Grand Haven as our home, and we certainly want everybody to know that we appreciate everything that's been done for us.
It is a great privilege and a pleasure to have the honor of presenting this beautiful flag, the symbol of our country, the flag of the United States of America, to Postmaster Roy Heerholzer and his staff on behalf of the past commanders of Post 28, the American Legion. This flag represents our love and devotion to our fellow men and to our great country. A flag may be a bit of flimsy bit of printed gauze or a beautiful banner of finest silk. Its intrinsic value may be trifling or great, but its real value is beyond price, for it is a precious symbol of all that we, as individuals, have worked for, lived for, and many have given their lives for. A free nation of free men, true to the faith of the past, devoted to the ideals and practices of justice, freedom, and democracy. May this flag always stand in its place of honor in this office, and be given our esteemed respect at all times.
Yes, sir, I do believe you're the winner. And your name?
Levon Barbie.
And where are you from, Laverne?
Battle Creek.
Tell me, how was the course?
Oh, it was pretty good. A little bit of everything.
Like, what do you mean?
Oh, we had some flat and some pretty good trail, and then we had a little bit of deep snow and some bends and about everything you could acquire in one trail.
Very good. Are you tired?
Yeah.
Are your dogs tired?
Yeah, they're pretty tired. They weren't ready for that bigger race, that longer race.
Okay.
All my dogs probably run 10 miles, and then they kind of gave out. If I'd have stopped and rested them for a while, they probably could have kept running, but they started trotting or walking, not really moving fast.
How long have you been racing?
Well, this is my second year in competition.
Very good. And what do you do for an occupation?
I'm a job printer.
Very fine. Well, this is a great race. We're happy to have you in Grand Haven, and hope you come back next year.
Thank you, and we hope that we can come back.
UFOs have been spotted in Ottawa County. For sure, one, almost certainly two, and possibly three. In fact, the reports of UFOs extended as far south as Allegan County and as far north as Muskegon, but Grand Haven and Holland were the focal points. The first call received at the Ottawa County Sheriff's Office last night was a report of a UFO in the Holland area. As patrolling officers started searching the skies, one deputy spotted a strange object over Lake Michigan near Grand Haven. Sheriff Bernard Grison and his wife, who were at their summer home on Buchanan Street near Lake Michigan at the time, heard the report on the police radio. Mrs. Grison went to the window to look. She called the sheriff. Both spotted the object, and Sheriff Grison then walked outside to get a better look.
I'd say they probably watched it for 10 minutes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Was it bright?
It was real bright. Real bright.
Color? Did it have any color, or just white, or...
Kind of like an off-white, a little bit of a yellowish.
Did it blink at all?
Well, it didn't at first, maybe for the first 5-6 minutes. It's hard to explain, and I certainly don't know what it was.
Did it change color?
No. There was a red light, and there was a green light. and it looked like these were changing. These were blinking.
Mm-hmm. Regularly, like on an airplane?
No.
Could you determine any shape at all?
No, actually, I couldn't. If it would strictly to say I saw an outline, no, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to determine the shape of it. And I, from what I could really try to look at it, and the length of time I had to look at it, I would say my guess on what I saw and not seeing the actual outline, I would say it was round.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean like a basketball, like
no.
Some reports that have had. I would say perfectly round.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I thought, well, maybe it's a trick balloon or something like that. That
is this your first reaction? You thought it might have been a balloon of some type?
Yeah. Until it moved.
How did it move?
Too fast to be a balloon.
Did it?
Yeah. Unless there was awful strong wind currents.
How did it move? In an erratic course? Did it go sideways? Or how did it go?
For about the first 5 minutes when I watched it, it would go sideways. In other words, it would hover maybe for 30 seconds, and all of a sudden, just like it would jump. There was no sound, I know that for sure, because I was close enough, and I would have heard it. Then, towards the end, before it started blinking, it started going up and down as well. And I could see the reflection of the light off whatever it was. And like the sun would set at night, you see the reflection on the
right. The
water. This kind of reflected off the ice.
You field. Could see a reflection on the ice.
Oh, yes.
How high above the water or the ice do you think it was?
I would say not more than 300 feet.
And then how far from you was this object, do you think, by just guessing?
In the neighborhood of, say, 2 or 3 city blocks.
Close enough so you could get a good look. You weren't obstructed by trees? Or...
No, I was right overlooking the lake, and I could see it.
Apparently, Grayson's sightings were accurate. They were confirmed by a total of 4 other deputies and 3 reserve officers. In addition, the sheriff's office received a total of 9 telephone calls from residents of Ottawa County who had spotted strange objects in the sky. Deputies saw UFOs at Grand Haven, near Borculo, and over the Holland area. The sightings were reported between 8:15 and 10 p.m. The sheriff was rather reluctant to admit that he had seen anything because of the many calls, some of them crank calls, over the past few years.
Because I'd heard so many calls of over the past several years, I'll bet you that we've gotten into the hundreds.
Have you ever seen anything like this before?
Never.
Did you shoot at it?
I would have liked to if it got to the closer.
When asked early this morning if he still believed he saw the strange objects, the sheriff said...
No, I know that I saw it, but I wasn't to talk about it.
Doug Chapkus, WGHN News.
I believe there's a chance that Venus got mixed up in it at one point, or perhaps 2 points in the sighting. But I'm also convinced that that wasn't the only thing they saw.
About 50 friends of the captain of Grand Haven's Coast Guard cutter Woodbine were on hand last night to bid him farewell. Lieutenant Commander Donald Cunningham has been transferred to Cleveland, effective about the 1st of April. He is being replaced here by Lieutenant Commander John Mitchell of Boston. The farewell stag party was held at Wynn Schuler's. Grand Haven Mayor William Creason, on behalf of the community, presented Cunningham with a pen and pencil desk set, as well as a desk calendar and memo pad. Henry Parker of Harbor Industries presented him with a large drawing of Cunningham, which was signed by all present. Mayor Creason, who also acted as MC, had these nice things to say.
Don Cunningham has been a great guy. He's been able to swing with the pendulum of all the personalities, the Henry Parkers, the John Wallouts, the Virg Quebmans, the Bill Creasons, the Alan McCalls. And if you've ever dropped into a town and only been there for a couple of years, you've got to try to find out all the little personalities, the little quirks, the little innuendos, the little prejudices that people have. And I think it takes quite a guy, quite a character, quite a background to be a fellow who can blend in and still leave and everybody come out here and say, it's a grand fellow. And I think that this in a sense, is the biggest gift that we can give you, is the fact that all of these personalities came down here to say to you, we've enjoyed knowing you, and we hope when you go away, you'll have a little bit of us in you, and you'll remember us.
Others who gave brief messages of farewell were the mayors of Spring Lake and Ferriesburg, Lieutenant William Schobert, head of the Ludington Group of the Coast Guard, former Mayor Glenn Eaton, JC's President Al Federico, Coast Guard Festival Chairman Chuck Bogelski, Councilman John Walhout and Virgil Quebeman, Chief George Bond of the Grand Haven Lifeboat Station, City Manager R.V. Terrell, Robert Sonrell of the Corps of Engineers, Board of Light and Power Chief Roy Edwards, and the Executive Officer of the Woodbine, Lieutenant Ed Margeson. Cunningham had these words of thanks and appreciation.
Well, I certainly appreciate all the very wonderful mementos. I'm sure I'll look back upon this tour as one of my happiest. I've met some very fine people. And I sincerely have appreciated being part of a very warm community, a very progressive community. It's been, I think, somewhat of an eye-opener to me that a community can be this progressive, move along the way this community does, be sponsored and be held together, be led by many of the very people that are in this room. So it's been nice knowing you all, and I hope sometime to be able to drop back down there. And thank you very much.
Doug Chapkus, WGHN News.
The trophy is presented annually to the one who's shown the greatest proficiency in flight and aviation, but also in their contribution to the airport activities. And the competition was tough this year, as it always is. The runner-up was Dick Malott with 198 points. And then the winner is one who ought to know better than to take candy away from babies. And that was Kit Marson with 256 points.
Nature of Order, new assignment. Detached upon relief on or about the 15th of March, 1967, to proceed to the duty with the Lake Carriers Association, Cleveland, Ohio, duty under instruction, Merchant Marine Industry Training, via Coast Guard Headquarters. Reporting date, 1 April, 1967. Signed, J.J. McClellan, Captain, U.S. Coast Guard, dated 30 January, 1967.
Subject, officer travel orders. From Commandant, United States Coast Guard, to Lieutenant Commander John R. Mitchell, 5983, U.S. Coast Guard, via Commander, 1st Coast Guard District. Nature of order, new assignment. Proceed and report to Grand Haven, Michigan, for duty as Commanding Officer, Coast Guard Cutter Woodbine. Report not later than 15 March, 1967. Signed, E.E. McCrory.
Very interested person in our Star 2 project is Mr. Lou Feed. He's the operation manager of Star 2 project from General Dynamics. Mr. Feed, perhaps you could tell me some more things about this interesting little, I call it mini sub.
Well, we don't call it a mini sub, we call it a research submarine. It's capable of carrying two people 1,200 feet below the surface. In a surface atmosphere. We have an advantage over normal divers that breathe compressed air, and that we are, just as you are here on the surface, breathing natural air. So we have no limit on our time at depth except for the endurance of the submarine itself, which can go up to 24 hours on very minimal duty. Of course, the people normally set the endurance limit. Their span of attention is only about 8 hours for a good, useful return on the submarine. It was built by Electric Boat Division of General Dynamics as a research vehicle to do our own company research and also to gain knowledge of oceanography through research projects such as this that we're on. Do you have any specific questions?
Yes, tell me about the lighting. I know you have cameras aboard, but how about the lighting when you're down 900 feet or 12,000 feet.
Well, this evening we'll have exterior lights mounted, and we will use them probably from 70 feet on down here. And they're very intense lights that illuminate the area. Our camera has its own strobe light, which flashes just as a flashbulb does for taking still pictures. Our television is highly sensitive and will take or will see well in reduced visibility, but we still need lights in murky water and at deep depths. Out in the ocean sometimes, down at 1,000 feet, you still have enough light to be able to distinguish things. But generally, at several hundred feet, you lose your light.
What are some of the things that they might see when they take this sub down in Lake Michigan?
Well, I think you'll have to check with the University of Michigan on that. They have been studying the lake for quite a while, and we're here to take them to where they want to go for seeing what they want to see.
A friend of Grand Haven has died. 87-year-old Major General Benjamin Foloy died yesterday at Andrews Air Force Base Hospital in Maryland. Word was received in Grand Haven this morning from the United States Air Force headquarters in Washington. A telegram from the Secretary of the Air Force was received by Mayor William Creason. A telephone call from Air Force headquarters was received by Coast Guard Festival Director Chuck Bogelski. General Foloy attended Coast Guard festivals in Grand Haven for 4 years, and during that time made many friends in the community. He had been invited to attend the dinner meeting at Washington next Monday of the Tri-Cities Chamber of Commerce delegation attending the National Chamber meeting. However, he had been forced to decline the invitation due to failing health. The same was true about the 1967 Coast Guard Festival. One of his closest friends, of many in the community, is Coast Guard Festival Director Chuck Bogelski. At his last visit here, General Foloy presented Bogelski with a pair of sunglasses and one of his pipes, for which he was noted. Bogelski still has an autographed picture of the father of the Air Force on the wall in his office. The Coast Guard Festival Director gave this statement today.
The Coast Guard Festival Committee and the City of Grand Haven and its citizens deeply mourn the passing of one of the nation's greatest personality. Major General Foloy, who just celebrated his 87th birthday, was one of the nation's most active aviation enthusiasts, starting his career back in 1910 when the United States Air Force was originated. He retired from active duty in 1935 after 37 years of continued service, and then continued for another 19 years as president of the Air Force Historical Foundation, during which time he traveled over 500,000 miles by air, emphasizing national security to the men and women of the United States Air Force at home and overseas. We in Grand Haven were highly honored to have General Foloy attend the annual Coast Guard Anniversary Festival for 4 years. He was truly a brilliant personality with a keen sense of humor and ability to vividly recall even the most minute detail of many events which happened in many places all over the world. He never forgot anybody who served under him and was thrilled in being able to stay in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Hunter Robbins of Spring Lake each year while in Grand Haven. Mr. Robbins proudly recalls receiving his wings from this great general. The 40 Tri-Cities area men who will be going to Washington this Saturday will miss the general's appearance at the Grand Haven dinner on Monday night, an invitation which he accepted a few weeks ago. Not only we in the Tri-Cities area, but the entire world have lost a great statesman.
The likable general had more credits to his name, more firsts in history, more military records than probably anyone else in the history of the armed services. Today's Washington Post is expected to contain more than 20 columns in his obituary. 2 years ago, during his last visit to Grand Haven, Foloy told his entire story to WGHN's Dan Bethel in a tape-recorded interview, an interview that was preserved for history. The general was the nation's number one military pilot. He flew the number one plane, and he vividly recalled accepting it from the number one aviators of the day, the Wright brothers.
Well, they were two of the finest men I ever knew. I mean, they were men. They were men of deeds, not words.
Oh.
I always remember the, I think it was the night or a couple of days after we accepted number one, which was on the 2nd of August, 1909, just after we'd made the final acceptance test. They gave a big banquet in Washington there for the Wright brothers and ourselves, the Aero Club of America. They had the usual political and diplomatic speeches and things like that, and then the Wright brothers were called upon to say something. Well, Orville, the most talkative one of the two, got up and said all he had to say in 5 minutes. And Wilbur got up and he said... Wilbur got up and he says, "Gentlemen, amongst the birds, the parrot is the best talker and the poorest flyer." And I never try to emulate the parrot. And he sat down.
Amazing. Well, I understand that you sat down in a plane with Brother Orville and flew a plane from Fort Myer to Alexandria. And in the process, you set 3 records. What were those records?
Well, that was the final acceptance test for the Wright flyer. We carried out all the other tests, and the final acceptance test was a cross-country flight, 5 miles and back.
Oh.
And speed, they had to make a speed of 40 miles an hour in order to make the contract price, which was $25,000.
What was the maximum speed you reached at that flight?
Well, we made, in fact, we broke 3 world records on that trip. The speed was round trip, average 42.5 miles an hour, altitude 400 feet. Cross-country, 5 miles and back, all 3 world records.
Yep.
Wilbur Wright didn't have to give me any instruction at all, according to the contract, but he gave me 54 minutes instruction between that time and the 5th of November. Left me with 54 minutes instruction, a broken-up airplane, 8 enlisted men, 1 civilian mechanic, the whole Air Force at that time.
Just wonderful.
Well, I sat around there for a while for waiting spare parts. The signal officer said, "Well, how long take you to pack that plane up?" I said, "Lying all over the hangar." I said, "In 24 hours. Well, he said, "You pack it up, take plenty of spare parts, I'm going to send you down to Fort Sam Houston, teach yourself how to fly." And I took it up on the 2nd of March. I made 4 flights that day with it. My first solo, my first takeoff, my first landing, and my fourth was the first crack-up, all in one day. After I cracked that up, I hauled it back into the hangar, and mechanics and myself got sat around trying to figure out what happened on that last trip when I broke the tail off it. Finally, I decided what I'd thought I'd done, so I sat down and wrote to the Wright brother and told them what I had done. They wrote back and told me what I ought to have done. I'm teaching myself how to fly to the seat of my pants.
A phrase that has lived through the ages among aviation instructors. He was the first pilot to fly more than 10 miles nonstop. The first to use radio in flight, the first to use aircraft in combat. He was America's one-man Army Air Corps. The city of Grand Haven, upon receiving word of the general's death, sent a floral tribute to the Gawler Funeral Home in Washington, D.C. The first service will be at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. The body will then be flown to Washington, Connecticut, where burial will take place at 2 p.m. Friday. Grand Haven also fired off a telegram of condolence to the only survivor of the general, Mrs. Mary K. Reeves of Washington, D.C. The father of the United States Air Force is dead. This has been Doug Chapkus with WGHN Reports.
Third runner-up is contestant number 6, Nadja Ann Chapman. Second runner-up, contestant number 4, Cleo Ellen Conklin. First runner-up is contestant number 7, Tony Lynn Robleski. And now, I give you the 1967 Miss Ottawa County U.S. Coast Guard, Karen Louise Colson.
Congratulations, Karen.
Thank you very much.
Tell me, how's it feel to be a queen?
Oh, very exciting. Very exciting. I'm just thrilled.
Well, we're happy to have you. And your home is from
Fruitport, yes.
And your parents?
Mr. and Mrs. John Colson.
And are you attending college now?
Yes, I'm a student at Western Michigan University.
And what is your major?
I'm a dance major. It's in the physical education department.
A new chapel has been dedicated at Grand Haven's Lake Forest Cemetery. The ceremonies were held early yesterday afternoon at the scene of the chapel in the cemetery. Among those participating were the Legion Honor Guard, a choir made up of members of the Geneva and Westminster choirs of First Presbyterian Church of Grand Haven under the direction of Miss Joanne Jansen, as well as the Reverend Ronald Smingy, the Reverend Albert Parker III, and the Reverend Francis Brannigan. The Lee Memorial Chapel was first used in January of this year. It was a gift of Mr. and Mrs. J. Wesley of Grand Haven in memory of the war dead, but particularly in memory of their son James, who was officially listed as killed in action back in January of 1943. Construction began on the chapel in June of 1966. In August of 1966, J. Wesley Lee died without seeing completion of the beautiful chapel. Mrs. Lee made the presentation of the keys to Grand Haven Mayor William Creason in yesterday's ceremonies.
It is my desire, and I know it would have been Wesley's, that this chapel may not only be a memorial to our son, but to all the men and women of our community who have given their lives in the service of our beloved country, that you and I may be free.
The keys were accepted by Dr. Creason on behalf of the city of Grand Haven.
I'm sure that all who enter herein will be grateful to you for many, many years for this fine contribution. We think it's wonderful. I, in turn, of course, would like to present these keys to Mr. Fred Rascarla, who's chairman of the cemetery board. And we'll try, and the best that we know how, in the city of Grand Haven to make sure that this is always a lovely spot, a lovely place, a little retreat when time of sorrow comes. Thank you very much.
The building is 25 by 48 feet in size, is of colonial design. The interior provides standing room for about 100 people and is carpeted. The landscaping was also provided by the Lee Foundation. Doug Chapkus, WGHN News. Grand Haven's new $600,000 post office was formally dedicated yesterday afternoon. Grand Haven Postmaster Roy Hierholzer gave the welcome.
Welcome to the dedication of the modern new Grand Haven Post Office. We are proud of this post office and our new equipment and facilities. It will provide better working conditions for our employees and better service for all of us. The Post Office Department thanks the Tri-Cities Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring this dedication and the many others who assisted in the ceremony and related activities.
The high school band furnished the music and Dr. David Seibold was MC. Grand Haven Mayor William Creason also made brief comments.
On behalf of the City Council of the City of Grand Haven and all our wonderful citizens, we're real happy to have this day. We hope we'll get in the habit of dedicating things here in Grand Haven.
Guest speaker was Donald Swanson, Regional Director of the Chicago Post Office District, which includes Michigan and Illinois.
It's always a delight and a pleasure to come into a community, dedicate a new post office, and as Regional Director, I join with you today on behalf of some 72,000 postal employees in the states of Illinois and Michigan, some 2,300 post offices, in pledging to you and this community that we will utilize our services throughout these two states and throughout the nation to help provide you here in Grand Haven with the very finest of postal service that it's possible to have. Thank you.
Among the many honored guests at the program was Senator Philip Hart. 9th District Congressman Guy Vaynerjack was unable to attend. The program was prepared and coordinated by the Civic Committee of the Tri-Cities Chamber of Commerce and Postmaster Hierholzer. Open house was held after the formal ceremonies. Representatives from the news media boarded Grand Haven's Coast Guard cutter Woodbine bright and early this morning for a day on Lake Michigan. They were invited by the ship's skipper, Lieutenant Commander John Mitchell, the University of Michigan, and General Dynamics to take part in a news conference, to take a look at a tiny submarine called Star 2, and to watch demonstrations by the sub. It's a part of Project Submish, in which a two-week submarine exploration of Lake Michigan is being conducted for the first time in history. This was the first week. There's still another week to go. At the news conference, Dr. Jack Huff of the Great Lakes Research Division of the University of Michigan explained the purpose of the mission.
We have been on this submish operation for just a few days now. It is part of a long study of Lake Michigan being made from various points of view. This is something where we're really attempting to evaluate the submarine as a tool rather than to carry out a great deal of research with it on this at this particular time. What I am trying to do, however, is to study the bedrock structure of the lakes by going down and finding the rock and photographing it and so forth. Also to study former low-level stages of the lakes.
Dr. Jack Powers, a scientist from the research division, who has also been one of the divers, told of problems in visibility at the bottom of the big lake.
Well, there's a lot of organic material in the water and also inorganic as well in suspension. And this is one of the most evident things one sees from the submarine, particularly when the floodlights of the submarine are turned on. One has the impression of going down through a snowstorm in the water. This material reflects the light back so that it looks white, and the particles are somewhat magnified by this reflection process. So one is looking through this rain then of organic snow, and the concentration of this organic snow seems to vary from one part of the lake to another. And this may be associated with the magnitude of phytoplankton, or the minute algae, the rate of the bloom of these phytoplankton and small algae in the lakes, which probably contribute largely to this organic snow. It appears to be, however, primarily dead organic material, which is in the process of decomposition and settling out. We also found that this material seemed to be denser as one went toward the bottom of the lake, so that as one went deeper, particularly on Saturday on the eastern side of the lake, this was true. And our visibility was restricted to about 2 feet horizontally near the bottom. On the other hand, on the center of the lake yesterday, at a depth of about 140 feet, where there happens to be a high ridge in the lake, visibility at the bottom was 8 to 10 feet, and one could observe the details at the bottom quite well.
Adding to that, Dr. Huff told of geologic samples taken from the lake bottom.
We haven't found anything that's really unexpected, because the sites I selected for visit by the submarine are ones where I have been before with surface vessel, and I've had a dredge down there and pulled off a sample of bedrock. So I haven't made a new discovery of a new occurrence anywhere, but the attempt was to go down and log this thing foot by foot the way you would a road cut on land geologically and get a complete record, photographic record, description, etc. Now, the visibility has not been quite good enough to do that as yet. But at least I've gone down and seen this rock, bedrock in place, not something brought in by glacial ice, and various other items of this type. So it's been very useful to see what we've never been able to see before. On this mid-lake high where we dove yesterday, it was interesting. We have taken grab samples, as we call them, from the surface, and we've gotten sand or small pebbles or something. We saw boulders up to as much as 9 feet in diameter, standing perhaps 5 feet above the lake bottom, all over the place. And this could not have been determined by our previous methods.
Dr. David Chandler, chairman of the research division and head of this special project in Lake Michigan, reported on future plans.
I think that at the end of the 2 weeks, we will compile the information or the opinions of the various scientists and try to evaluate this as a tool that we would like to use in the future. I think all the indications are now that we would like to use something of this type each summer in the next few years.
And Alan Anderson, manager of development engineering for General Dynamics, told about the Star 2 and other products of his company.
In addition to this type of experience, our Star series, which includes Star 3, and we're proposing to build a Star 4, to permit the academic communities and the world to get deeper into the ocean. I think Dr. Spilhaus of the University of Minnesota has called these boats the burrows of the ocean prospector. This Star 2 has just come from a job off the coast of New Jersey. She was inspecting cables for a public utility. These are the transatlantic cables. This submarine is capable and is designed to go to 1,200 feet. Now, Star 3 is a 2,000-foot submarine, two-man.
When the Woodbine returns to port in Grand Haven late this afternoon, open house will be held for the public from 4:30 until 8 p.m., giving everyone an opportunity to see the small submarine on the deck of the ship. The area's newest state park has been dedicated in formal ceremonies. The ceremonies, lasting for 2 hours, were held yesterday afternoon, getting underway at 2 o'clock at the old Norton Park, which has now been added to the new Hoffmaster State Park on the Ottawa-Muskegon County line. The Mona Shores High School Band provided special music. The Reverend Fred Neal of the First Congregational Church of Fruitport offered the invocation, and the master of ceremonies was Joseph Strait, Jr., past president of the Michigan United Conservation Clubs. Brief remarks were made by Dr. John Kitchell of Grand Haven, the new president of MUCC.
This park, Pete's Park, is a kind of a preventive medicine for our society. The organization which I represent so proudly here today played some part in making this park a reality. I can't recount for you just what that park was. Perhaps it would have come into being without MUCC. I am certain that it would not have materialized had there been no dedicated group to work for it. We are indeed happy to share with the legislators, the department, the Parks Association, and other citizens the credit for making Hoffmaster Park a reality.
Others who made brief remarks and who participated in the program included three state senators and five state representatives from Ottawa and Muskegon counties, officials of the State Conservation Department, the Michigan Parks Association, and Norton Township. A plaque was unveiled honoring the late Director of Conservation, for whom the P.J. Hoffmaster State Park was named. This was done by Miss Genevieve Gillette, President of the Michigan Parks Association. Doug Chapkus, WGHN News.
May I congratulate all of you for what has been accomplished. The trustees of the Laudit Foundation for nourishing the seed of the idea and supplying it with ample sustenance. The citizens of Grand Haven who passed the bond issue, the architects who designed the buildings, and the craftsmen who constructed them. Collectively, you have taken a cultural step forward. But unless the books in the library are widely read, the theater is filled with spectators, and unless the meeting rooms and studios are occupied by groups who, through formal classes, informal meetings, and pleasant social gatherings, will continue to learn about their cultural inheritance, unless all of those things happen, your efforts will have been in vain. You have created a magnificent community asset in a lovely setting. Now, use it. Thank you.
It's without precedent. For the first time in history, the Tri-Cities and surrounding townships have banded together, pulled together, and finally voted together for a common cause. In a special election held yesterday, residents in six of the eight governmental units taking part favored by a wide margin of nearly 4-1 the formation of a joint hospital authority. Only residents of the city of Coopersville and the township of Polkton were against taking part. In the city, they voted against joining the hospital authority 217-139, and in Polkton Township, the measure was defeated 123-73. Other than that, clerks reported victory in each of the governmental units taking part. In the city of Grand Haven, the margin was better than 4-1. Voters approved joining the authority 1,913-408. In the city of Ferrisburg, it was 213-83. In Spring Lake Township, the vote was 780 to 192. In Grand Haven Township, residents approved joining 623 to 184. In Robinson, it carried 125 to 112. And in Crockery Township, the vote was 176 to 113. No precinct reported a loss in the two cities and four townships in which the issue carried. The turnout was good, and the results conclusive. Hospital Board Chairman Harold Ringelberg had this to say after all the results were in.
Speaking for the Hospital Board, we're pleased that six governmental units voted favorably for the Joint Hospital Authority. We believe that the overwhelming support for the program proves conclusively that the residents of our area wish to join hands to provide an up-to-date hospital. I wish to thank everyone who has worked hard to present the facts to the voters. Our committees did an outstanding job, and we also wish to thank the news media for their excellent cooperation. Now that the election is behind us, the new hospital board accepts the challenge the voters have given us, and we are ready to work hard to provide a good hospital for this area.
And Grand Haven's new hospital administrator, Donald Andrews, had these happy words.
Naturally, we are extremely pleased that the vote was so overwhelmingly in favor of the Joint Hospital Authority. We're sorry that we lost the two areas, but we are deeply gratified that we got what we did. We set out to inform the voters of the problems of the hospital, and we are deeply happy with the number of people that turned out to help in the publicity. We think they did a tremendous job. We're very pleased. We wanted the voters to know what the issues were, and we feel that everyone has helped just tremendously, and we're very, very happy.
But this has merely started the wheels rolling. Those involved in the hospital project will be very busy. There must be meetings preparing for eventual takeover of the Grand Haven Hospital by the Hospital Authority. Board Chairman Ringelberg says these will be the next steps.
The next step will be for the six appointed board members from each of the governmental units to meet, appoint a temporary chairman, and then the seven board members at large are elected by the six appointed members. Then we will organize our new board and begin plans for the new hospital and for operating the present hospital.
Do you have any idea when the changeover might be? In other words, when the city might turn over operation of the hospital to the new authority?
Well, when our new board is organized, we will be meeting with the city council, the Grand Haven City Council, to work out the details for making the changeover to the new authority, and I have hopes that this can be worked out within the next couple of months.
Eventually, it is hoped that the Joint Hospital Authority formation will mean the construction of a new hospital for the Northwest Ottawa area. We asked Don Andrews this question.
Don, I know that through all of this, way in the distance, you've had visions of someday getting a new hospital for our area. Do these seem to come a little bit more into focus now?
They certainly do.
Doug Chapkus, WGHN News. A brand new school building in Grand Haven has been formally dedicated. The ceremonies were held last night at 1700 South Griffin Street, a school named in honor of a North Ottawa pioneer known as the Henry Griffin Elementary School. Open house was held following the dedication. Opening remarks were given by Grand Haven Superintendent of Schools, Ralph Van Valkenburg.
A school building is a measure of a community's values. As we look around our community, take a look at our schools, in our churches, and our fine public buildings. This, again, is the proof of in what do we believe, in what do we place our value.
The building was presented to the Board of Education by John Vanderbiden, Jr. of the architectural firm of Vanderbiden and Cotellus. Ivan Fosheim, president of the board, accepted the building.
It's now my pleasure to present to the president of the school board, Mr. Ivan Fosheim, the key to this school.
Thank you very much, John. On behalf of the Board of Education and the people of this school district, I'm indeed pleased and proud to accept the keys to this, the Henry Griffin Elementary School.
The dedication address was given by past president of the Board of Education, Judge Jacob Ponstein.
To this end, the best education for all our boys and girls, do we dedicate this elementary school, the Henry Griffin Elementary School. Thank you, and God bless you.
Closing remarks were given by Principal James Kramer. Doug Chapkus, WGHN News. Fire has virtually destroyed Grand Haven's famous old Highland Park Hotel. City firemen were called shortly before 10 o'clock last night, but they were too late. The old building was destroyed almost completely by fire, although the outer shell remained standing this morning. Early today, after firemen had nearly completed their work, WGHN talked with Fire Chief Tom Tilden at the scene of the blaze. He was asked if firemen knew what caused the fire.
No, at the present time, it's more or less under investigation.
Then he was asked where the fire started.
It was more or less west of the kitchen area, and it started somewhere in this area, either second. We've had reports it was possibly on the second floor or the first floor. We're not as sure just yet.
Chief Tilden said the fire had a good start when he arrived.
She was going through the roof at the back part, and then naturally by the time we could get the two trucks and the other trucks in here and get set up, she was going pretty good there in the center, and then with the wind, it took quite a little bit. And deluge gun that we had really helped stop it. And then with the other lines coming in, as slowly as we were able to bring the other lines in, we was able to bring it under control. It took us about probably an hour to really bring it under control that we knew we had it. And it took about another hour to knock it down so we were sure of it.
Firemen remained, however, at the scene throughout the night to make sure the flames did not start up again. Fire Chief Tilden was asked to estimate the amount of damage or loss.
Might run 100,000. Might run less, it might run more. We won't know until we can get a contact with the owner and his insurance company comes in and they make a final appraisal of it.
When asked if he suspected foul play, the chief said this.
Well, we always suspect foul play on any fire. And mostly when a thing is closed up like this, there's always this possibility. I hate to say that there was or that there wasn't right at the present moment because we don't really know.
The state fire marshal will make a routine investigation. Doug Chapkus, WGHN News.
Naive in those days. And
yeah.
I said, Mr. Warren, tell me something. I said, I always thought that someday you'd build yourself a nice, big, beautiful house up on Spring Lake or somewhere of that sort. He says, Johnny, tell you something. He says, there's something in an old house you can't build into a new one. Yeah. And he says, we're used to that type of a house. I think he'd come from the South. And he says, we like this big old house. And he said, we bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very happy. They lived out their days in it, too. Mr. Warren passed away, and Mrs. Warren lived around here for quite a number of years and lived in that house all the time.
Right,
they were very, very fine people. Kind of people that you love to know and have in town. Yeah, well.
But there's a lot of truth in that, isn't there?
Yeah, I've never forgotten it. And as a matter of fact, I've mentioned it a good many times in showing an old house. So there is something in the house of this type that you can't
get
into.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, from all intent and purposes, they last how many lifetimes?
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
That's right.
You can't measure it by lifetime. I lived in the house that was over. Well, it was pretty near 100 years old when I took it. up on Howard Street. Fixed it up. It was a very, very comfortable house. We sold it. We moved out of it. We sold it. People lived in it for a while. Sold it. And we just sold it again a few weeks ago. And, you know, it still looks good.
It does.
Yep. Huh? Good house. Wasn't a very expensive house either.
Uh-huh.
Well, when I look back at it, Doug, and think of the taxes and the cost to heat it, you just can't believe it. Well, let's go over to Spring Lake here.
Good.
It's a nice little house. It's three bedrooms, living room and kitchen. Not a bad kitchen either, Doug. And an attached garage, all under one roof. Could stand a little doing, but it's heated with space heaters. It was comfortable and cozy. I was in it the other day. It was just as cozy and nice
was,
in there. As, mm-hmm. And it's an easy house to take care of. Taxes on it will be low, but it's got a beautiful lot. This lot has a potential, well, value to it for more than one purpose.
It does, huh? Where is this located?
Well, this is up there, 700 Savage Street East. That's up near the Anderson Bowling Factory. There are some nice houses in that block.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a beautiful lot. It's 450 feet deep, runs way back into the woods. And it's about 400 feet wide at the back end, and it's narrower in the front. It's an L-shaped lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, gee whiz, when you figure the price on it, $6,500, what can you do?
Yeah.
For $6,500.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and it's hard to believe you can buy a house for
that's
that,
right. Now, here's another one that we just listed in the last few days. This is at 100 North 6th Street. This is on the corner of 6th and Columbus.
Oh.
Block away from the Civic Center, block away from the fire station, couple blocks from the City Hall, three blocks from the school, two blocks from some of the churches.
Pretty central
pretty
location.
Pretty handy, I
yeah.
would say. Pretty handy. And here's a house of 10 rooms. Now, this would make a good two-family house. Jerry and I were up there looking at it. We were going upstairs. All you'd have to do is cut a door onto the south side of it and put a couple of steps there, and you've got your stairway from the outside going up into the upstairs. There's five rooms and a bath up there.
Is that right?
One of those rooms could be made into a kitchen. And downstairs are five rooms and a half bath.
Boy,
so,
is this a big house,
John? That's a good deal. Yes, that's a big house. You bet it is. It's got a good roof on it and has been painted not too many years ago. It isn't hard up for paint.
Mm-hmm.
There's an attached garage. Kitchen isn't a 1968 model, but there's a cabinet sink. There's plenty of cupboards. It's a very pleasant kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, Doug, the whole house is pleasant. It's nice and light. Big, a lot of windows in it. And it has a part basement. It isn't a full basement, but there's gas heat. But, with the price of $7,500, that's a pretty good
deal.
I'll
say it is. $7,500,
I would
eh?
Say that you could make two apartments out of this house. And rent them for, well, you know, I'm afraid to say how much rent you could get for it. I talked to a fellow the other day, and he was telling me he was looking at a house that wasn't one that we had listed or anything. That's a house that, well, if he had purchased it, he would have bought it for the lot owner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the house. Told me. Mm-hmm. He told me that the tenant down there is paying $60 a month rent.
Is that right?
Yep. So I would say if you got 60 for each one of these apartments, it would be cheap rent. So that's $120
yeah.
a month rent for a house that sells for basically $7,500 plus another, $1,000 to divide it, make
yeah.
it two families?
Yeah,
pretty good
and
deal.
Do it right.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty good
for $1,000,
yep.
you'd have it fixed up nice.
Yep. That's a pretty good deal.
And you'd be more than taking care of your payments each month,
you
John.
Sure would.
You know it?
You sure would. I, George, just happened to think of somebody might be interested in that.
Well, that house may not be for sale, then.
That's right. It could not. Well, it still is. Here's one. We won't talk about that. We had this house listed about 3 days.
Sold. And it was sold?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Was that the lady that was so happy?
No.
You were telling me about
that.
Oh,
I was telling you about that one. Yeah, that's a little house down on North 6th Street. The lady looked at it. Jerry took her down and showed it to her. And she walked in the living room, and she said, "This is my house. Don't you dare sell it to anybody else till I get the money on
it." Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And I was down to see her the other day. And she's just as comfortable as she can be. And I met her granddaughter the other day, and she says, "Grandma's so happy in that house."
Is that right?
I can't tell you.
Yeah.
So that's a nice feeling.
Yeah.
No, this is another deal. Well, that's a nice part of this business. You make friends and you make people happy, and you got a good buy-in when you know that the price is right and they're satisfied and the
then
buyer is happy and the seller is
friends,
happy.
They stick with you.
Here is one. This is 1339 Colfax. I talked about this one a couple of times. We haven't had a good taker for this one yet, but somebody's going to be very happy here, too. Here's a doggone good house, Doug, for 10-5.
This is on Colfax,
this is on Colfax out in the east end of town. It's a nice lot. The house is amongst a lot of nice houses. Most of them are newer out there, too. This is an older house, but a very pleasant-looking house, and inside has a feeling of comfort and hominess. three rooms downstairs, living room, dining room, kitchen, and a bath, and three rooms upstairs.
Oh, yeah.
About a half basement, and this basement's just as clean as the whistle. The whole house is. You know, you can move into this house without doing anything to it. You don't have to decorate it. It doesn't all run down. It's nice and clean. Carpeted living room, and as I say, the basement is about half basement. A little workshop down there, oil heat, and a nice garage. This garage could be made into a two-car garage very easily. It's a one-car now, but the size of it is all right for two-car, but it only has one-car door.
But it's big enough, huh?
It's big enough, yeah. 10-5. And that's a pretty good buy.
Yeah, I would
now,
say so.
Here's one that we've been sort of holding for someone who was looking at it, and they are still looking at it, but the owner is very anxious to move it. And this is out on Lakeshore Road at the intersection of Sheldon and Lakeshore. Here's a little brick face house of four rooms and bath. Just the thing for a small family. One nice-sized bedroom and one smaller bedroom. A beautiful living room. The living room faces the back of the house, would face the garden or the tree, the woods there into the hills. You've got a beautiful view on the hills.
Mm-hmm.
Living room has a fireplace, and there's a gas furnace. There's no basement here. This is all on one floor. And there's an attached garage, so you got everything under one roof. With a lot 84 by 130, that's a good-sized lot. And the house is 8 or 10 years old, just like new. It's got a nice bathroom. The tile bath in here.
It has, huh?
Well, price $11,000. How are we doing
nice.
On time?
We're just
here?
About out, John.
Are we?
Yeah.
Well,
that sounds like a good one, though.
Could keep on talking, but if we're out of time, we'll have
to
quit.
Yeah, I think we've just about
run
the course here. But it's been nice talking to you.
Nice talking with you, too. And we're going to be in the office all day today.
Good.
Our number is 842-3440. If you got a house to sell, call us. We'd be tickled to death to come out and look at it. We'll appraise it for you.
We'd like to have that, a listing or two.
We'd like to have a listing or two. We got to start the new year with a few.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good. Well, John, will you be back next week?
Lord willing, I hope so.
Good. We'll look for you then.
Okay, Doug.
Goodbye now.
Yep.